Well, good evening, truth seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. It's about 7 past the hour. We're going to be joined in about 54 minutes by Greg Palast, author, journalist, general all-around hellraiser, and defender of the American democratic way, as dead as it is, but still a defender. So Greg will be joining us in about an hour. Nova M founding members, you can join the live chat going on right now, novamradio.com. Just go to the website, click on the chat button, enter your username and password, and chat amongst yourselves with your host, Billy Foster, Nova M Radio's chief information officer. And there's a brand spanking new message board there, too. Spanking board? What does that mean? Is Nova M Radio into something I haven't been told about yet? Spanking?
I don't know. I have a toddler. It colors my brain.
Spanking. A spanking board?
A brand spanking new message
board. Oh, okay. I'm
being
sorry.
Colloquial.
All right. I thought there was something that Nova M was into that I hadn't got the memo on yet, but apparently not. All right. Brand spanking new. Oh, I see how you're using it. Thank you. I just got a little rush there for a second. Where does this come from? Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government. Yeah. Your boy Thomas Jefferson wrote that, and that was in the Declaration of Independence. And I think in saying that, Jefferson understood that the time would come when his grand experiment would fail, would hit a brick wall. Although I don't think hitting a brick wall was a colloquialism in the 1770s or 1760s. But whatever the equivalent colloquialism was back then, I think Jefferson and the framers understood that there was a very good possibility that their grand experiment would crash and burn at some point, although crash and burn was probably not a colloquialism back then. I don't know what would have been the equivalent, but you can see where the program's going to go tonight, right? So I've gotten several emails to people say, Jesus, are you a pessimist? What do you mean our system of government is over? Oh, come on, come on. I mean, it's one thing to be a blind optimist. It's something else, again, to just be blind. The Congress is beginning now what some say will be even more divisive than the attempt to overhaul the immigration laws last week, and that is some energy legislation, all right, trying to tame America's thirst for oil. And the Senate yesterday began debating an energy bill that has already kicked off, I love the way New York Times puts this, an epic lobbying war by huge industries, some of them in conflict with one another. Car companies, oil companies, electric utilities, coal producers, to name a few. Industry groups have raced to sign up influential lawmakers and are nervously calculating how much regulation they might have to accept from the Democratic majority in Congress. Blah, 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 blah. The lobbyists are arriving. They're flying to Washington like flies around a dung heap. Now, where are the consumer groups, the environmentalist groups in the energy bill, told to take a powder by the Democratic Party leadership, just as the Republican Party leadership told them to take a powder? And some of you challenge my statement that democracy, as the framers put it together, is dead? Come on. Come on. And, a lot of people, not a lot. I got one email from somebody who said, well, Malloy, it's not dead. It's on life support. No, it isn't. It's dead. It's gone. Hello? While you were out of the room, it died. How many times have you sat death watch with somebody? a relative, a friend, a complete stranger because you do volunteer work at your local hospice, your hospital, and you get up to go take a leak or get a drink and you come back and the patient's dead. That's what's happened to the framers' experiment in representative democratic government. It's gone. If you don't believe me, let me ask you something. If you try to take a meeting with a key Democrat or Republican in the House or the Senate, you are going to fail. But if you represent an oil company or a pharmaceutical company or a medical association or a carpet industry or whatever the hell it is, and you are willing to contribute $100,000 or $200,000, you will be ushered in immediately. What is wrong with that picture? Actually, nothing. That's the way corporatism works. But please, stop with the emails, all right? Telling me that I'm being a pessimist when I say that what the framers had in mind, what they put together and said, here, run with it, see how far you can go, has died. It's dead. We did run with it. Now, the question becomes then, where do we go from here? Don't know. Do you? But who was it who famously or infamously said, in order to know where we're going, we have to know where we've been? Or something like that. Perhaps in order to know where we're going, we have to know where we are at this particular moment. And where we are is by the bedside of democracy. Democratic representative government is turning cold and stiff. Just thought I would mention that. There is a link to an article floating around. We found the weapons of mass destruction. I got this from thinkprogress.org. You can get it from several different websites if you choose to. It is no secret that the U.S. military has used the ocean as a trash can for all sorts of toxic munitions that we have produced in this country. Remember, we are and have been for a long time the number one producer of ammunition, guns, bombs, bullets, death, destruction on Earth. But sometimes, you know, overstock, uh-oh, got too much. What are you going to do with it? Can't find a buyer. Dump it. The Army now admits that it secretly dumped 64 million pounds of nerve gas and mustard agents into the sea, along with 400,000 chemical-filled bombs, landmines, and rockets, and 500 tons of radioactive waste. All up and down the East Coast and a little bit off the continental shelf, is there one? Off San Francisco in the Pacific? This toxic material was either tossed overboard or packed into the holds of scuttled vessels. And what happens? Well, there's one example in, pick a number out of the past. How about 1987? Hundreds of dolphins washed ashore in Virginia and New Jersey with burns similar to mustard gas exposure. One marine mammal specialist suspects Army-dumped chemical weapons killed them. One ship was loaded with 301,000 mustard gas bombs and 1,501-ton canisters of lewisite. That was sunk in the Pacific off San Francisco. Nerve gas? A drop of nerve agent can kill within a minute. When released in the ocean, it lasts up to 6 weeks, killing every organism it touches before breaking down into its non-lethal chemical components. Mustard gas can be fatal. Sea-dumped chemical weapons might be slowly leaking from decades of saltwater corrosion, resulting in a time-delayed release of deadly chemicals over the next 100 years. So we have found the weapons of mass destruction. It's 16 past the hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Good Thomas Jefferson makes me want to cry. Think that the chair he sat in someone could buy. George. prayers is fake like a money belt, but I'll pray to Mad Time instead. Please come back, Tom, and save us from King George again.
You know, it'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
Anyone past the hour, I would think at this point, I, as I wander around inside my own head, I would be shockproof that there would be nothing I could read where it concerns the follow-ups of the Bush crime family that would shock me anymore. And then I read something like this. There's a guy named Henry King Jr. He's 88 years old. He was one of the prosecutors at Nuremberg back in 1946. And he was an assistant to Robert Jackson, who was the Supreme Court justice who presided over those trials. He was the architect of the Nuremberg war trials. And Henry King Jr. is quoted today as saying that the U.S. war crimes tribunals in Guantanamo have betrayed the principles of fairness that made the Nazi war crimes trials at Nuremberg a judicial landmark. Now let that sink in for a second. What's going on at Guantanamo has made a mockery of what we set up at Nuremberg. Now, you and I know this. I mean, we already know this. We're shocked and appalled. But here is a prosecutor who prosecuted the Nazis. He says what is happening at Guantanamo violates the Nuremberg principles as well as the spirit of the Geneva Conventions of 1949. The whole effort at Nuremberg was to hold accountable, and then later in Tokyo, hold accountable those who were seen as, rightly or wrongly, those who were seen as the architect of the war, World War II, that cost the lives of 50 to 75 million people on this planet. And it was set up by the Allied powers to try the Nazi military and political leaders. Mr. King, 88 years old, one of the prosecutors, lives in Ohio, said, quote, "The concept of a fair trial is part of our tradition, our heritage. That's what made Nuremberg so immortal. Fairness, a presumption of innocence, adequate defense counsel, opportunities to see the documents against which they're being charged, or that they're being charged with." Now, this prosecutor, Henry King Jr., interrogated Hitler's architect, Albert Speer. And he was incredulous when he found out that the Guantanamo rules left open the possibility of using evidence obtained through, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, coercion. King said, quote, "To torture people, and then you can bring that evidence into court? And let me get this right, hearsay evidence is allowed? Some evidence is available to the prosecution and not to the defendants?" Mr. King said, "This is a type of, quote, justice, unquote, that Justice Jackson didn't dream of," end quote. He said the Guantanamo prisoners should be tried in the court-martial system or the U.S. federal courts under fair rules that leave open the possibility of acquittal. And he points out that three of the Nuremberg defendants were, in fact, acquitted. The Military Commissions Act that Bush and Cheney and Gonzales and the pigs that operate the Republican Party, the Military Commissions Act that was rammed through in 2006, which set revised rules for trying suspected terrorists at Guantanamo, King said, quote, "sort of turns its back on Nuremberg. I don't think it's a credit to us to have this thing," End quote. This thing of ours, la cosa nostra, this thing of ours, this thing we're doing. King said, quote, the United States has always stood for fairness. That's the important thing. We were the ones who started war crimes tribunals, and we're the architects. I don't think we should turn our backs on that architecture. Astonishing, isn't it? A man who was there, a man who assisted other prosecutors and jurists looking into the very face of evil incarnate. If such a thing as evil does exist, there it was, in the dock at Nuremberg. You've seen that picture. The Nazi high command, the Nazi industrialists, there they all were, on trial. How many were hanged? How many were sentenced to long prison terms? And by God, three were acquitted. And the man who stared into the face of evil and assisted in the prosecutions now turns his back on Nuremberg, or on Guantanamo, and says, my God, I can't believe the U.S. is doing this.
And your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
What are you playing?
Did you pretend it didn't matter?
Turn it up.
Did you blame a few bad men? Did you think your leaders would just do it all again? How far is it from here to Nuremberg?
What is that? David Rovick? Is that our boy Rovick? Could be. 25 before the hour. If you're not in the Nova M Radio chat room, why don't you go there? I just went to the message board too. Pretty cool. Billy Foster, who handles all of this technical stuff, has really done a jam up job. So you should check it out. And if you're not a founding member, well, you could become one. You know. This is from the Jerusalem Post. This is kind of scary. The headline is Military Plan Against Iran is Ready. And they're not talking about the Israeli government. Yes?
Well, of course it is. Lieberman just got back from there and handed it to them.
Well, that's true. This is dated a couple of days ago. What's the date today? Oh, yesterday. Predicting that Iran will obtain a nuclear weapon within 3 years and claiming to have a strike plan in place, senior American military officers have told the Jerusalem Post they support George W. Bush's stance to do everything necessary to stop the Islamic Republic's race for nuclear power. Military officers? Now, there's also a story floating around that says certain military officers have decided to resign high command, positions of power within the military establishment in the United States because they understand that there are madmen running, they understand there are madmen running the U.S. government, and they're going to get us into another war, a third one. Bush has repeatedly said the U.S. would not allow Iran to go nuclear. So back to the Jerusalem Post. Yaakov Katz writes, a high-ranking American military officer told the Post that senior officers in the U.S. Armed Forces have thrown their support behind Bush and believe that additional steps need to be taken to stop Iran. Predictions within the U.S. military are that Bush will do what is needed to stop Iran before he leaves office in 2009, including possibly launching a military strike against its nuclear facilities. And on Sunday, Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut said the U.S. should consider a military strike against Iran over its support of Iraqi insurgents. Blah, blah, blah. According to a high-ranking American military officer, the U.S. Navy and Air Force would play the primary roles in any military action taken against Iran. One idea under consideration is a naval blockade designed to cut off Iran's oil exports. On Sunday, the Israeli Air Force held joint exercises with visiting U.S. pilots. But Israel Defense Forces said, no, the drills were not connected to an attack on Iran. Now, that's rather a strange report in the Jerusalem Post. And, of course, Wolf Blitzer used to be the Washington correspondent for the Jerusalem Post. So if anyone would know, it would be Wolf. And I don't believe he has been talking about this, has he? I'm trying to never, ever, ever again watch television news. I'm trying. But the Inter Press Service is saying a media campaign portraying Iran as supplying arms to the Taliban guerrillas fighting U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan is a lie. The media campaign portraying Iran appears to have backfired last week when Defense Secretary Robert Gates and the commander of NATO forces in Afghanistan, General Dan McNeil, issued unusually strong denials. The allegation that Iran has reversed a decade-long policy and is now supporting the Taliban, conveyed in a series of press articles quoting senior officials in recent weeks, is related to a broader effort by officials aligned with Dick Cheney to portray Iran as supporting Sunni insurgents, you know, Sunni insurgents, the ones we're going to start arming, including Al-Qaeda, to defeat the United States in both Iraq and Afghanistan. So Cheney is the evil bastard behind so much of this. Cheney and Lieberman, apparently Lieberman. Lieberman, who could have been in Cheney's position, but he isn't. My God, we have some evil people here. There was an article in the Guardian of the UK published May 22nd that quoted anonymous U.S. officials as predicting, quote, an Iranian-orchestrated summer offensive in Iraq linking al-Qaeda and Sunni insurgents to Iran's Shia militia allies, end quote. And referring to the alleged Iran al-Qaeda link-up as, quote, very sinister. Now, that showed up in The Guardian, May 22nd. May 30th, CNN, Washington Post, June 3rd, ABC News, June 6th, all included an assertion by an unnamed U.S. official or a senior coalition official that Iran is following a deliberate policy of supplying the Taliban's campaign against U.S., British, and other NATO forces. In the most dramatic version of the story, ABC reported NATO officials as saying they had caught Iran red-handed supplying, shipping heavy arms, C4 explosives, and advanced roadside bombs to the Taliban for use against NATO forces. Now, far from showing that Iran had been caught red-handed, the report quoted an analysis which cited only the interception in Afghanistan of a total of 4 vehicles coming from Iran with small arms and munitions of Iranian origin. The report failed to refer to any evidence of Iranian government involvement. It might have been coming from Syria, Saudi Arabia, Israel, Lebanon, Russia, or the U.S. But because it was coming out of Iran, there it is! Both Secretary Gates and General McNeil denied flatly last week that there is any evidence linking Iranian authorities to those weapons. Secretary Gates told a press conference on June 4th, quote, we do not have any information about whether the government of Iran is supporting this, is behind it, or whether it's smuggling, or exactly what is behind it. Gates said that some of the arms in question might be going to, are you ready, Afghan drug dealers! I don't remember seeing a report on the Situation Room or Charlie Gibson's program or the Washington Post or NBC retracting their story or modifying their story. Do you? No, you don't, because it didn't happen. There was no retraction. There was no modification. What is left floating inside of our heads? Oh, the Iranians! My God! They're sending bombs to Iraq. They're sending bombs to Afghanistan. They want to kill us all. We must nuke them. And then in today's New York Times, did you see this? This lengthy column written by three people, one who used to head Lawrence Livermore Lab, the other two, William Perry, who was Clinton's defense secretary, and his assistant. They have written, the three of them, a piece about surviving a nuclear attack on the United States. And they make reference, oblique as it is, to Iran. Do you understand what's going on, True Seeker, to sum this all up, because I'm getting tired of shrieking and screaming? We are being prepped. We are being prepared. We are being propagandized. We are being hammered over the head with lies and distortions once again. Only this time, it's not as simplistic as, well, they have weapons of mass destruction hidden behind those palm trees. No, no. No, no, not this time. This time it's real nuclear weapons, even though they don't exist. But there's nothing like an op-ed piece in the New York Times written by Clinton's former defense secretary warning the American people. He gives you a description of what will happen if you live downwind from a nuclear explosion in an American city. Oh, my God. There are people in this country who want this war so badly, they're willing to do what American administrations have done for the past century, lie through their teeth in order to get us prepped. What was it that George Herbert Walker Bush said way back in 1991? That Saddam Hussein was the biggest threat to world peace since Adolf Hitler? What? And Americans bought it. And did anyone protest the first Gulf War? I mean, really get out and protest it? I mean, you know, 100,000, 500,000? You know, the truth is, I don't remember. But I don't think so. All I remember are yellow ribbons everywhere. And the troops marching off to war. Cheney wants a nuclear war because Cheney knows that his days are extremely numbered because of his physical condition, and he wants to see a nuclear holocaust before he croaks. How about that?
Remember, blood and toil and sweat and tears, remember, the nightmare lasted 6 long years, remember. The world drowned in the bloody tide of war and death and genocide. 57 million died. Remember, it's happening again. It's happening again. Can't you see?
That the unrest in the Middle East creates unrest throughout the region.
Oh my God, he's so dumb. See, the weird thing about Cheney trying to link the Taliban and the government of Iran is that the government of Iran has been mortal enemies of the Taliban for the past decade. Not so much because they are necessarily a different sect of Islam, but because of the Taliban's association with Pakistan. Don't ask me, I don't know why, but the Iranians and the Pakistanis don't like each other. As a matter of fact, it's like Republicans and Mexican immigrants. It's that sort of a thing. Now, the commander of NATO forces in Afghanistan also disagrees with the propaganda being jammed down our throats by Cheney, CNN, ABC, The Washington Post, NBC, and all these people who desperately want war. The commander of NATO forces in Afghanistan, General Dan McNeil, already identified, implied that the arms trafficking from Iran is being carried out by private interests. This is the real world. This is so impossible for Republicans to understand or for the news media to understand. There are independent agents who operate. Hello! There are arms dealers who make fortunes on dead children and blown up people and bombs and guns and nukes and all sorts of things. Good Lord! It's not all directed by some government. There are organizations, private interests. The general says, quote, when you say weapons being provided by Iran, that would suggest there is some more formal entity involved in getting these weapons here. That's not my view at all. End quote. But these simplistic bastards, these religious thugs, these fundies in this country and the Republicans who cannot deal with a complex thought, just sit there and eat it up and spew it out. Oh, the Iranians. Oh, my God. They're sending weapons there. They're going to have nukes. They're going to get us. Iran is going to drop a bomb. Ha, ha, on Chicago. Where at? The Sears Tower. No, not the Sears Tower. Someplace else. Where? I don't know, but they're coming. Oh, Jesus. Let's attack them. Iran was the first external power to support Afghan forces in an attempt to overthrow the Taliban regime before we ever got into it. Iran. And it's not merely the sectarian Sunni-Shia divide, but the Pakistani government patronage of the Taliban that has made the Taliban an irreconcilable enemy of Iran. And so what are we going to do? Well, of course, we're going to bomb Iran. And why are we going to do that? Because Dick Cheney wants it. Because the Project for a New American Century wants it. Well, How do you cope with that? If democracy, if what the framers had given us 230 some years ago was still operating, we would have an effective way of dealing with a thug like Dick Cheney, or an incompetent freak like George Bush, or a lying, filthy degenerate like Alberto Gonzalez. If our Constitution were still a mighty force for self-government and democracy, small d, and representative government, I just said that, didn't I? Yeah, I think I did. And the power of the people, government of, by, and for the people. If that were still true, you see, I'm still trying to prove my thesis here. If that were still true, then these people would have been removed from office. But it is not true. So what do? Well, I think the screen going to black was an excellent idea. I really do, because it leaves the audience with the idea of any ending they want. So, you know, rather than sit here and try, in my limited ability to come up with a solution. I get lots of people say, well, all you do is bitch. Don't you have any solutions? You know the answer to that? No, hell no. I'm not a government scholar. I'm somebody that believes that the people who put the country together had a pretty good idea, even though they treated slaves and women as though they were slaves and women. No, I don't have any answers. All I have are questions. I'm not that smart to have answers. But I'm not so dumb as to not have questions. Those are Republicans who don't have questions.
What are we doing now? Oh, we go over there? Okay. Do we stand here? Okay. What do I say?
Nuke Iran.
Nuke Iran?
Nuke Iran.
Okay. Nuke Iran! Nuke Iran! Nuke Iran! What else do I say?
So the screen goes black on this program every night at midnight Eastern time, and several times during the program. We just go blank, black, blank, nothing there, nothing there, absolutely nothing, no solutions, no resolutions, nothing. Just don't stop. Kind of like that.
Maybe Greg Palast will have some solutions or offer a little bit of hope for the future.
Well, we're going to find out here. We're going to find out here in about 10 minutes, aren't we? Stick around, Truth Seekers. Greg Palast coming up next. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. This is the Malloy Program. It's about 7 past the hour, and we are coming to you via the Nova M Radio Network. I never know how to introduce Greg Palast, because all of you know who he is. Journalist, BBC investigative reporter, author, muckraker, and pretty much all-around good guy. Hey, Greg. Where's my man, Greg? Do-de-do, do-de-do, do-de-do. We have him here. There he is. No, I heard something.
Yeah.
What do I hear?
Ta-da-da. Cavalry has arrived.
You're talking to me from a cave in Romania.
You're right. I'm not going to tell you where I'm at. Are you kidding me?
You've got Bush's watch.
I've got better. I've got Rove's email.
Oh, my God. Hey, we haven't talked for a while.
Yeah.
I want to go to something that you wrote probably 2 weeks ago about Monica Goodling testifying that Gonzalez's chief of staff, Kyle Sampson, perjured himself.
Yep.
And all about Tim Griffin, the former attorney in Arkansas, and his involvement in caging voters in 2004, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And you also wrote about how the poor, perplexed senators doing the question, the committee members, I should say, didn't have a clue and didn't know what to ask. And
so no idea.
So Karl Rove is still smiling and still standing. And all right, you ask it yourself. First of all, what is caging? Make it so I can understand it,
right.
Greg, and why it's such a dreadful secret that
Monica had to take the fifth to say it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So what happened? Just to get everyone up to speed, Monica Goodling, the blondling underling of Alberto Gonzalez,
yeah,
in the hearings on the prosecutor firings before the Conyers Committee. Like all good girls from Pat Robertson's college graduate, took the Fifth Amendment, testified under immunity, and said, now that I'm immune, I'm going to tell you, they are kind of required to fess up to any crimes that they committed or no were committed. And she says her bosses lied, basically perjured themselves before the committee by not admitting that they knew about Tim Griffin's involvement in caging voters in the 2004 election. Everyone's like, what? Griffin caging? Huh? Say what?
Yeah, right.
And for good reason, because it's not been covered in any way in the U.S. press. And what this is about, Tim Griffin is the right hand or right claw man of Karl Rove.
Right.
Okay. And he was the guy who helped Rove pick out which prosecutors should be fired.
Mm-hmm.
And even better, he himself was a U.S. attorney, was named after they fired the honest guys.
Right.
Rove and Griffin had Griffin appointed U.S. attorney for Arkansas. Now, the plot thickens because Karl Rove said his minions can't find the office emails, thousands of them, because they used the Republican Party computers. And apparently the cleaning lady hit the delete button when she was going through the RNC headquarters.
Oh, damn. Don't you hate
that happens?
It happens
all the time.
Yeah,
you know, she moves the cat and there you go.
Yeah.
So, but lucky for Carl, don't worry, Carl, you didn't lose all of them. I've got 500 of them. Okay? Now. Yeah.
No, wait.
Okay,
how did you get them?
They sent them to me. A lot of people think that Karl Rove is an evil genius, but in fact, they're only half right. He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
No, I've heard that.
His character.
Yeah, he's kind of...
And his team wrote emails instead of to georgewbush.com, which is the intranet spider web of the Republican campaign.
Right.
They sent it to georgewbush.org. Now, .org is owned by John Wooden, who is the guy that knows me and my work. I bet Greg Powell would be interested in this stuff, and he got 500 of these things. And sure enough,
GeorgeWBush.org?
Yes, he owned it. He bought the site for this reason, to capture any missent emails. And sure enough, now the thing is that if they were just, you know, like the usual love notes to Grover Norquist or any of that stuff, we would ignore it.
Right.
But this was quite different.
Yes.
Next to, they were a bunch of emails by Tim Griffin,
mm-hmm.
Rove's right-hand man, and they were, and 50 of them said, caging list attached. Here's a caging list going to the top guys in the Republican Party. Now, what's a caging list? As it turns out, it took a lot of work to actually figure out what these darn things were. We printed them out, thousands of names and addresses of voters.
Uh-huh.
Turns out what they were is a list of voters to challenge, to say these voters shouldn't vote. Why? It turns out because they had suspect addresses. That is, they were fraudulent voters. They were illegal voters who shouldn't be allowed to vote. Okay.
Like people in prison.
Yeah, well, except, yeah, now just like now, for those who know Greg Palast's work, you know, my stuff, I'm the guy that, you know, uncovered how they knocked out thousands of voters in Jeb Bush knocked out thousands of voters in Florida in 2000 as felons,
right,
and
right.
They were criminals. They were voting while black. Well, now, instead of being criminals that shouldn't vote, they were black voters, mostly minority voters, who were voting from fraudulent address. Now, what was a fraudulent address? One of the biggest single groups, well, there was homeless men. There were students on vacation. And there were soldiers, especially naval airmen. We had page after page of American soldiers. Now what they did was, caging is a gimmick. Here's the trick. Here's the sweet little trick they pulled. They'd mailed out hundreds of thousands of letters to these voters.
Right.
If they came back undelivered because the voter wasn't home, do not forward. They would then take the return letter and say, aha, evidence that voter doesn't live at the registration address.
But he's in the military.
Mike, you are now, what a dirty mind. Are you saying that they accused military men of being fraudulent voters and they were just making this up? Why wouldn't, like Randy Prouse was one of these guys. We called these people.
Right.
Said, you know, why isn't Randy at home? And why do you think?
He's in the Persian Gulf.
Yeah, they were sent overseas. So, right, so what happens, go to Baghdad, lose your vote, mission accomplished. Now, here's the thing. This is not only creepy, disgusting to challenge the votes of soldiers, but it's against the law. One, you know it's illegal. And two, if you challenge black people exclusively, you've now broken two laws.
Yes, you have.
The 60, it's a felony. Go to jail felony. And Tim Griffin was sending out these lists. So in other words, the guy who was in charge of the guy who was perpetrating the crime on a massive scale of illegally challenging voters like soldiers. The perpetrator then becomes the U.S. prosecutor for Arkansas. Perpetrator becomes prosecutor.
That's
another
that's
mission
Tim.
Accomplished. And so Monica was saying, okay, I confess. I know all about this. I know that that we put in Griffin and he was involved in this illegal caging of voters. But no one on the committee understood what the heck was going on because they hadn't read our madhouse.
Right.
Because right there on the missing email, one of the seriously incriminating emails is reproduced on page 207. It's right there. Now, there was one member of the committee who had read the book and was grinning because he was waiting for this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Chairman Conyers.
Uh-huh.
Okay, who watches my stuff on BBC, doesn't miss a BBC report of mine, reads all my stuff. Okay, now, but he knows he can't get ahead of the committee. So he's listening to Monica talk about caging Griffin. But it was his opening. So then he called BBC television and said, I need Greg Palast. Now I need Greg Palast information on Griffin and on caging for our investigation.
Okay, let's stop there. I got a break. Yeah. So Conyers gets a hold of the BBC and says he wants to see what you've got. All right, let's pick it up when we come back. We're talking with Greg Palast, author of Armed Madhouse, investigative reporter who does most of his great work for the BBC. Why is that? Because he scares the hell out of American media. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy.
He lies and he lies and he lies. He just lies and he lies and he lies and he lies. He can lie any time. He can lie any place. He crosses his fingers and keeps a straight face. He lies and he lies and he lies. Too many believe him, they're bleating like sheep. Accomplices now in the liar's deceit. He lies.
When you're astray.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking with author, journalist, BBC reporter, general all-around hellraiser, Greg Palast, who is the author of his most recent book, is Armed Madhouse. And what we're trying to do here is explain to Mike Malloy and the people who listen to this program exactly what happened when Monica Goodling testified before John Conyers' committee investigating the firing of these attorneys, these federal attorneys, and how Monica Goodling gave the committee all they needed to charge Samson, Gonzalez's chief of staff, with perjury, but did not. Now, where were we?
I made it almost. It's really McNulty that she was particularly nailing, but the whole crew. I mean,
the whole crew.
Here's how it worked. So what happened was is that Conyers. So going back, if you just tuned in, this is Greg Palast. What we did was saying that the only member of the committee that had any idea what she was talking about was Conyers because he'd read our madhouse. He could turn to page 207, and there's the missing Karl Rove email with Tim Griffin's name. It says caging, and it's all about illegally removing the votes of thousands upon thousands of voters, in particular black soldiers. I mean, it's one of the creepiest. I mean, in a way, it's even creepier than the felon purge. But, you know, because they're going after guys that they know, first of all, are legal voters, and they're doing something our president never got around to do, which is serve his country.
Right.
And now Conyers. So then he said, give me the evidence, calls up London. We said, you got it, under the condition we can mention on the air. We did, and within hours, Tim Griffin resigned as U.S. Attorney for Arkansas.
But it's there on page 207 in Armed Madhouse.
Yeah.
Why is Karl Rove still standing? Why
is Tim Griffin not being read his rights? First of all, because you just figured out something.
I did.
Both theft is the perfect crime. What was Timmy Griffin's job? He was the prosecutor. So what's he supposed to do? Read himself his rights? Put himself up against the wall? Cuff himself? How does this work? Does our Alberto Gonzalez look in the mirror and say, "You're busted"?
Bingo.
That's how it should work. McNulty was number two at under Gonzalez, deputy attorney general.
Right.
What do they do? They turn themselves into themselves. Do they have a party where they each handcuff each other? Now I know that they do that, but I'm talking about under the law.
So Gonzalez.
So the problem is that that's one of the problems. The other is this story broke in Britain and all over the world. BBC is the world's most prestigious and certainly largest, at least, news network, and second most prestigious after Nova M. There wasn't one single report in the U.S. media about this. And in fact, the only report about caging I've seen in the mainstream media in America was an article in the Los Angeles Times where they let me write about the death of investigative reporting, and I use this as an example of stories that haven't been reported on.
Mm-hmm.
But Rove knows what's happening, because here's the other trick. So I met with, with Congressman Conyers.
Mm-hmm.
It was very film noir. We got to get in a hotel room near midnight in New York.
I saw a picture, I think, of the two of you together.
Yeah, actually, I'll put up another one on gregpalace.com tonight. We have a film, too,
uh-huh.
where he's getting the evidence. And, of course,
right.
since he knows the basic stuff from reading our Madhouse, but he also, it's pretty gripping for him to see this stuff. And, of course, he's looking at the names of black soldiers who are losing their votes. I mean, it's pretty creepy, and it's not exactly thrilled with it. Immediately, of course, Griffin resigned, hoping to take the heat off, but he said, we're not done with Griffin. But here's the nice thing. Griffin is an important guy, but most people don't know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing Griffin isn't is a direct mail expert, is a guy who could actually pull this thing off. When Monica Goodling was asked a single question, and the single question was by one confused congresswoman, what is caging? She said a direct mail it's direct mail terminology, junk mail terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tim Griffin, U.S. prosecutor, lawyer, may have learned some dirty tricks here and there, but he wasn't a junk mail, direct mail expert. He was a military attorney.
I wonder who was.
Who was? TikTok. Who owned a junk mail, direct mail business before he became White House counselor?
Let me think.
His initials are Karl Rove.
Oh, no!
Yeah, so there's no way that this illegal, felonious, election-fixing operation could have been done. And I'm sorry, if Mr. Rove wants to come at me with his lawyers, how could his right-hand man be using highly technical direct mail techniques and terminology without his direct mail techniques and terminology, Mr. Fix-It, having his soft little teeny hands involved in it, Mr. Rove? So
what we're doing
is we're closing in
Greg,
on Rove.
You got to hold on.
Yeah.
All right? Can you stick around? I hope you can stick around for another segment. I'm sure you can. All right, stick around. If you'd like to ask Greg a question, very quickly, 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, we're talking with Greg Palace, author of Our Madhouse, BBC reporter, investigative reporter, and man who is probably going to single-handedly bring down the Bush administration at some point. If you haven't read Our Madhouse, shame on you. Now, Greg, what we're going to do is take some calls, if you don't mind.
Sure.
All right. And for the folks that are calling in with a question for Greg and comments here, do me a favor, just this one time. You all know I don't do guests. Very seldom. Greg Palast is one of the two or three that we have on, and there's a reason for that. So I'm going to ask the callers, if you would, try to keep your questions succinct, pointed, and let Greg handle the answer for you, okay? And I want to move along here as quickly as possible because he's only going to be here for 25 minutes. Let us start. Having said all that garbage and taking up enough time to have gotten a call in, let's start with Gary in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Gary, welcome to the program. Say hi to Greg.
Hey, Greg, and thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Hey, I think you guys are both great. Listen, I got to ask you, how do these people get away with this constant lying? From this pre-war lying, the Downing Street memos, all the way to these lost emails and this caging, how do they always escape justice?
Yeah.
Well, because they don't. Not everyone listens to Mike Malloy.
Oh, stop.
I'm actually not kidding about that.
Not everyone reads your books.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the problem: is that we are locked out. I mean, I did this whole story of the caging list and the wiping out of the black soldiers' vote, just like I did the Florida felon purge, which had zero coverage in the U.S. press at the time. By now it's been all over the U.S. press, but it took like 3-4 years to get into the U.S. press. Oh, yeah, that felon purge in Florida. They didn't cover it at the time. They're not covering the caging of voters right now that's going on. They're not covering Karl Rove. They will later. It'll be in a couple of years. So we don't get the stories. So we don't have the information. The rest of the world does. The rest of the world was horrified. In fact, we first busted the caging story in 2004, BBC, and the world was like just absolutely horrified. I said, what is this stuff with American democracy? You got some cowboy, you know, some cowboy, he's afraid of horses, let's not forget, who rides around in a golf cart, who thinks he can drop democracy from a B-52, and yet this is what he's doing to the soldiers he sends abroad. I mean, people are just stunned worldwide, but we just don't hear it here. If we did, I think that there would be some that we'd have the regime changed. And even, I got to tell you, I want to add this, you know, Conyers got the info, but can he get it in front of his committee? That's not so easy. You know, the Democrats on his committee are pretty much convinced that they've got a limited, you know, they've got this kind of inside the beltway fight about whether Bush and Rove and the Klan fired prosecutors for political reasons. That they weren't loyal Bushies. Well, that's interesting, but that doesn't exactly set America on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But what Conyers understands completely and told me is that, look, it's about voting. It's not about the investigation is widening out from firing prosecutors into fixing elections. The problem is, can he bring his committee along to agree to do that? That's going to be the bear.
Mm-hmm.
So
why is it, let me jump in, Gary, if you don't mind, why is it so hard for Conyers to get this in front of the committee members and start subpoenaing people, starting with you, to come in? Well, he wouldn't have to subpoena you, but requesting that, starting with you, to come in and just start talking.
Well, a couple things. Let's not forget, Conyers is the dean of the Congressional Black Caucus, and most of his committee are members of the Congressional White Caucus.
Yeah.
They do not understand about vote suppression. They still don't get it because the White Caucus guys, even the Democrats, are in complete denial about what's happening to them and what's happened to voting in America. But they have to understand, Democrats have to get it. Unfortunately, a few do, but they're often in on it, like Zell Miller of Georgia, who blocked the Democratic Party from ending vote suppression of the black vote in Georgia. Well, we know where he was actually a fifth columnist for Bush.
Sure.
But I know that he was deeply involved in anti-voter games in Georgia. So and Mike, you know all about that coming out of Atlanta.
Oh, sure.
So what's happening is that too many Democrats are complicit and the rest are in denial.
So does that work, Gary? Does that answer for you?
Yes, it does. But you think it'll hit the fan before election time?
Yeah, well, I got to talk to one guy who I think might be able to help influence the rest, and I know he talked to Conyers because he brought up to me without my mentioning it Bill Clinton last week. And now whether the information has crossed the pillow to the senator, I don't know.
Well, you know, I why don't you sit down and, well, I'm sure he already knows. I was going to say sit down with Al Gore and explain this to him. Oh, never mind. Let's move on. Let's move on to the phone calls here. Rocco is calling from Rosendale, New York. Rocco, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing, Greg and Mike?
Doing fine.
Just wanted to ask Greg, are there any plans for a new book or, you know, and what might it be about?
Well, I've just put out a new edition of Our Madhouse just a couple weeks ago, which, whether they like it or not, I finally made it into the New York Times. It's on the New York Times bestseller list, so they can't erase it, you know, from the paper. But the new edition of the book, which just came out, has three new chapters. One is The Theft of 2008. And then another, in case that's too depressing, called How to Swipe Back Your Vote. And then another chapter called Busted, which is about my being charged with violating the Patriot Act by the Department of Homeland Security when I was filming the real story of New Orleans. So I'm working on that. That book is, since it just came out, the new edition, that's what you need to pick up the updates.
I have it.
Yeah.
But we want more.
We want more. And then the other thing is I'm working on right now with John Conyers. Actually, when we met at midnight, most of our discussion, believe it or not, was not about the prosecutor firings or Roe or the rest, because, you know, I handed over the info that that his committee asked for, and we're sending more within the limits of, you know, professional conduct at the BBC that we're making this public. But we have another story that just has him deeply steamed, which is that Bush's cronies have figured out how to tap into the money meant to pay for AIDS medicine in Africa, and
the billions that Bush is constantly talking about that he's
and this is like one of the sickest, weirdest stories out ever, and Conyers is just livid. And so what happened was we have this story that I did for BBC, which is we discovered that some of Bush's cronies, one is named Paul Singer. He's the big money bags behind the Giuliani campaign. He's raising $10 million for Rudy Giuliani, the number one Republican Party donor in the city of New York. Makes all of his money by what's called the vulture operation, where through fancy financial finagling, he was able to tap into the aid money for Africa, which is earmarked for medicine and education.
Right.
I kid you not. These guys have sucked up $1 billion of this. Now, Conyers is so steamed, he went personally to the White House and confronted George Bush with this and said, you know, look, I just got this report from BBC, and here's the, you know, your guys are not only, first of all, it's not only creepy, but it looks like bribery is involved. That's violating U.S. law.
Right.
And you can do something about it. In other words, the president can put a stop to this. A lot of this involves their seizing the bank accounts of African nations, I kid you not. What you cannot do, you can't just walk into a bank and put a lien or a garnish on a bank account of a foreign government, especially when they're about to use it to buy AIDS money.
Yeah, but
you need the approval of the President of the United States.
Yeah, but you also can't torture people that you've scooped up because they've been driving a cab in downtown Kandahar. All right, back to some phone calls here. Dave in Oakland, California. Dave, welcome to the program, and say hi to Greg.
Well, you sort of touched on it with the earlier question, but from the break, my question was, so much evidence has been coming out in the last year, and both of you are terrific, by the way.
Thank you. You're
not gluttons for that sort of praise, but I listen to you all the time, and I get your newsletter, and I've just watched what you've uncovered and the way Gonzalez has endured all this, you know, this crazy firing. He's still in office. I'm wondering, my question at the break anyway was, do you feel, or how do you feel in your gut this time about the info at hand being enough to actually get Karl Rove into a courthouse?
That's an excellent question.
I mean, you know, to me, it's completely nuts because we've got this solid evidence on Griffin playing games with the vote. And, you know, like Griffin, who's the military attorney, would know caging from a hole in the ground.
Right.
He had to get, there's only, you know, and plus he's running a multi-million-dollar operation. He's Rove's right-hand man, and he's dealing with the heads of the state Republican parties. First of all, they should all be read their rights and carted away. You know, they should make a nice little chain gang.
Yes.
But the daisy chain goes all the way up at least to Carl, because he is deeply, you know, I mean, And all I can tell you is that I used to do racketeering cases and racketeering conspiracy investigations for the government. A guy like Rove would definitely be on the indictment right now. The other thing is I spoke to U.S. Attorney David Iglesias, who was fired. And, you know, and he said, look, Karl Rove personally flew out to New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
got the complaints that Iglesias wasn't bringing cases, what Iglesias called bogus voter fraud cases. See, you have to understand what this is, to connect some dots here. The reason that they were firing U.S. attorneys was that they weren't bringing voter fraud cases. They needed voter fraud cases because the caging list thing was going to come out at some point, and they have to justify knocking off tens of thousands of voters and say, well, look, there's all these fraudulent voters.
Right, right.
In fact, we have this from internal emails that did get to the committee. And by the way, no kidding, they were complaining about Greg Palast and our Madhouse in Rove's office. They even had little attachments from the book bitching about it. And, Rove personally ordered the hit on Iglesias after getting complaints he wouldn't bring false prosecution. And plus, Rove operates without the president, you know, there's kind of plausible deniability space between them.
Right.
However, Rove, I guess, didn't believe he could go to Iglesias and order him to fire people, so he went to the president of the United States. So
all
now
right.
It goes all the way up to the Oval Office, man, all the way up.
Oh, gee. Oh, no. You're kidding. All right, listen. Hold on a second, Greg. When we come back, I have a question for you.
Sure.
We're talking with Greg Palast, author of Our Madhouse, a new edition out. You've got to get it. I'm hoping that Greg will send me a free copy. I'm sorry, but, you know, I work in talk radio. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 9 before the hour, a couple of minutes left here with our friend Greg Palast, author of Our Madhouse. The most recent edition is now an investigative reporter for the BBC, a guy that should be working in American media full-time, but isn't. There's a couple of questions here. First one from Craig and Linda in Boone, North Carolina, Greg. And they wrote in, can or has Greg given this material to the military Times or whomever so the troops that got hosed can find out about this?
What a smart idea. Thank you. good. Yeah, that's a very good idea because, I actually have a lot of supporters and readers within the U.S. military.
Right.
Who are not so happy about being abused for a political stunt, which is quite bloody.
Make a hell of an article in the Army Times or Air Force Times or whatever.
Yes, that's a very good idea, and I'm going to make it my responsibility to take that on and do that.
There you go. Craig and Linda, you just put a bug or a bee in Greg's bonnet. Now, I have a question for you. Is Conyers Committee or anyone going to subpoena this bastard, Karl Rove?
They should. I mean, I do know that that Conyers told me that his right-hand man, Griffin, who we know has been named
Rose
by Goodling.
Right-hand man, right.
But yeah, named by Goodling.
Right.
And obviously we got the goods on him. And you always start by going low levels. You start with the Monica Goodlings, then you move up.
Right.
So he should have them. He says, look, our committee's not done with Griffin. He hasn't appeared yet, but now there's reason to do so. The question is then, can they keep going up to Rove, which they should, because obviously it's there. Once you get Griffin, you've got Rove. Now the question becomes, will the committee have the courage and the foresight of its chairman and say, as he says, I believe that a committee should not be limited by the subject matter on the headline, which is the prosecutor firing, but go where the evidence leads.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and the evidence is leading to massive program of vote fixing.
Is it the Conyers committee that has already written the subpoenas for Myers and Rove and their assistants, or is that a Senate committee? I'm drawing a blank on that.
No, it would have. I can tell you the Senate committee is not moving anywhere near as fast as.
Okay.
As the House side is Conyers, but the thing is, in fact, when the Senate committee was looking at Griffin, they said, "Oh well, he's just interim appointee. Well, he's just going to be interim through the election of 2008,
well,
which
of course.
Is all they care about, right?
Right,
you
exactly.
Know, it's like, you know, the Democrats, it's like you know, it's like Richard Speck. They all have those tattoos on their arms, born to lose.
Oh my God!
I mean, they have to, you know, again, it's Conyers. I like him because he. He believes he can't afford to be in denial. And so he's, again, you've got a chairman, and now I do know at least Bill Clinton are the only two guys in Washington who really are ready to roll with this, who have authority and swing. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Clinton is kind of a bit in the shadow, but hopefully he'll influence the committees to go forward and take the evidence where it leads as opposed to saying, well, we've gotten some nice headlines in the New York Times, and NPR has covered us. As soon as we get into vote-fixing area, they start saying cranks and kooks and crazies, and it's political, and you're picking on Karl Rove, and it's a witch hunt. You know, you'll know the drumbeat is already starting, and in fact, as Randy Rhodes, my good buddy, has pointed out, she was already getting solicited for they're starting an anti-Conyers phone tree campaign.
Oh, God.
So, you know, they're already working out on him. And so pretty soon they'll start doing the kind of Cynthia McKinney thing where he's a fruitcake and a nut and everything else until he's completely discredited. I'm very worried about the ability to move this forward. You know, you would think that the evidence is slam dunk, but it ain't.
And not only that, but, you know, we're dealing, or you're dealing, or Conyers is dealing, with American media-influenced public. And this is a non-issue. The media has already said nothing untoward occurred back in 2000. Of course, then they went back and corrected themselves. But who knows? Nothing untoward occurred in 2004, nor did it occur in 2006. Oops, wait a second. I guess we did find something in Ohio. Yada, yada. But the American public, we need Karl Rove as a witness in order to get the interest again. It's like having a Paris Hilton appear. If Paris Hilton would appear and say my vote was stolen, holy Christ, the whole country would catch fire.
Yeah, you know, but that's the whole trick here is now not only to keep the public's attention, but you know, Rove is, as USA Today says, co-president.
Yeah.
You know, or you know the phrase. You know, he's known as Bush's brain.
Bush's brain. Yeah.
And so this is really serious stuff. When we get to Rove, we've got the president. The other question becomes: is not like I say. I do know that Rove, at least according to U.S. Attorney Iglesias, met directly with the president on these firings, which were again about elections and not about being loyal Bushies. David Iglesias is about as loyal a Bushie as you can get. A conservative Republican.
Right. It's
he
about
just wouldn't start, you know.
Sure. It's about felonies.
Innocent voters to cover the caging game. Again, that was all about covering the caging game.
Yeah.
To say that there's a reason to bust those voters.
And it's all about felonies, i.e. high crimes. Hey, listen, Greg, always a pleasure to have you on. Please take care. Watch your back, okay?
Hey, I'll listen to your show and watch my back.
All right, man. We'll talk again. Take care, Greg. Take care. Greg Palast, author of Armed Madhouse, among other things, investigative reporter. You know who he is. Jesus, go to gregpalast.com. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. welcome back. It's about seven past the hour. I'm sorry we did not get to all the questions that folks had for Greg Palast. We'll have him back again, I promise. Again, if you haven't been to the NovaMRadio.com site and gone into the chat room, you're missing a lot of fun. Now, you have to be a Nova M founder, but there's always a catch. Always a catch. And also, this cruise coming up in October, I believe, I have not checked with the travel agent in Phoenix, but I believe there are still a few openings on the passenger manifest to come with Kathy, me, and the kid. And you know, a lot of people think, oh, Jesus, I don't want to take an ocean cruise with a three-year-old. But, I mean, we're not the only ones that are going to be on the boat.
Hey, neither do we.
Yeah, well, that's true. But anyway, we would invite you, if you've been thinking about signing up for this cruise and just going, there are still some real good deals left. Now, you can sign up after June the whatever. I'm not sure what the cutoff date for these specials are, but, you know, why wait? If you're going to do it now, okay? Come on. We would love to we'd love to meet you. It's difficult to in this business to meet folks who make this program possible, and I'm not trying to hit you, beat you up with cliches, but it truly is the listeners, or are the listeners, who make this program what it is. I mean, you know, I'm not so arrogant as to believe it's us alone. This is a two-way street. So the only way, the only chance we ever have to meet folks is, like, I'm going to go to Seattle in the middle of July for what is going to be a fun event. We did this about 18 months ago, I think. Stephanie Miller is going to be there, Ed Schultz, the Young Turks, and I think Tom Hartman and me. And that's always just great fun. It's just screaming, raucous fun. But going on a cruise with a much, 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 much smaller group, 60, 70 people, it just, I'm anticipating, I'm looking forward to this, and I think it's going to be a real hoot. God forbid the boat should capsize or we get boarded by terrorists or something like that, but I've never been on a cruise. What do I know? But if you've been thinking about it and you've just holding off, thinking, well, I don't know, come on. It's when is it, Kathy? October 12th? 7th. October 7th. Check your busy, busy calendar and see if you've got a week hole in there around the 7th where you can come join us. Okay? And if you do, go to NovaMRadio.com, and the information is at the website on how to come along on this trip. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we'll get out there and take over the boat. Just declare it, I don't know, we'll declare ourselves a nation and just take over, and or not even go that far. Just take over the boat and head for, or the ship, and head for some uninhabited South Sea island. Wait a minute, there's a TV series about that, right? Never mind. But we'd love to have you come along. So if you've been thinking about it, come on. Come on. All right, let's do some phone calls here in the last 45 minutes of the program. The number is 800-989-1480. There are a couple other things I wanted to bring up tonight, but we can wait. It can all wait. And let's start with John, who's calling from Lompoc, California. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Great. I love your show. I love your guest, especially tonight. I got his book.
Well, yeah, it's a good book, and now that he's updated it, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. I'm hoping I get a free one, but, you know, probably not.
Yeah, I wish I could get a free one, too.
I know.
That's the way it goes. If you're ever out here in Central Coast of California, look me up. The wine is pretty tasty out here.
Ah, I've heard.
Hey, you know, the reason I called, I used to be active duty Air Force.
Uh-huh.
I retired last year, and in 2003, I was in Okinawa,
uh-huh.
And one of my neighbors was a very special Army Forces guy.
Mm-hmm.
He went into the Philippines to do some special training in the spring of 2003,
mm-hmm.
And he brought back a bunch of pictures and a whole bunch of stories. And what they were doing, they were instructing people how to build roadside bombs.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, it was no big deal, and we hadn't heard about IEDs at that time, but I was kind of curious why we were building bombs when you know, we have tanks, planes, and the whole nine yards. And, you know, he was a really kind of weird Army guy. He was the kind of guy that guards dignitaries in civilian clothes.
Right.
You know, all kinds of weapons. And I'm just wondering if there's anybody out there listening that may have been part of that or knows other people that took part of that, if they could somehow get together and bring this story to life.
Because did you ask him why he was doing this? And, and that's A. Here's B. Who was he training?
You know, he was an Army guy. He liked to drink, and he would say, no, they were CIA agents, and they were people from all over the world there, he said. And, you know, the pictures, yeah, they were definitely a mixed group there. There were black people, there were white people, there were brown people. It was quite a group. But, yeah, I have no doubt in my mind what they were doing and then what we're doing in Iraq right now. I have no doubt.
Do you think, based on that experience, do you think that some of these IEDs going off in Iraq are killing American troops are planted by American operatives?
Absolutely. I mean,
really? That's a hell of a statement to make.
This is first-hand experience, Mike. You know, I've seen what I've seen. The guy told me what they were doing. They're teaching people how to make roadside bombs. What was the U.S. military doing that for? It might be wrong, but as far as I'm concerned, I have no doubt about it. Well, you know what, Mike? I posted this on Democratic Underground a couple of weeks ago, and they jerked it off within 30 minutes.
What do you think would be the primary or only reason that Americans would be building IEDs to blow up Americans?
Well, the president said himself he wants to restore chaos.
Well, yeah, but Bush is insane, and I can't see. American military personnel building IEDs to blow up American military personnel. This is a stretch for me, John.
The military were teaching non-military people how to build the bombs. They were like CIA agents, he said, and foreign people there. I don't think he was teaching military people.
Well, I don't doubt anything. I don't accept everything as truth, but I don't doubt anything about this filthy, corrupt Bush crime family. So that's a real interesting story, John. And I appreciate you sharing it with us. Thanks a lot. Take care, John. God, wouldn't that be horrifying? I don't put anything past the Bush crime family. Nothing. They are murderous bastards. They would kill their own family members if it would advance their agenda. And I'm not even sure what their agenda is anymore, except power and greed, which is all encompassing in its corruption. You can't get a more corrupting pair than power and greed, especially if you have power and you're motivated by greed. Good God, watch out. Watch out, world. It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at all. John is calling from Santa Clara, California. Hey, John.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hi.
Mike, to go into dovetail perfectly, I think what you're saying, Bandar Bush, I think at this point, needs to be introduced to the conversation. I tried to get on with...
Now you're talking about the prince?
The prince.
Yeah.
This is all in their own minds, by the way. The British, I think, created the so-called monarchy. Mm-hmm. After the Ottoman Empire broke up, by the way, but you know it's largely in their own minds. But the BBC show, I wanted to tie in with Greg. Panorama unveiled the scheme in which BEA, that's Brian Andrew Edward Systems, Britain's
largest. Can you hold on 1 second?
Sure.
All right. Well, a little bit longer in a second, but just stay right there. We'll put you on hold and come back right after the break. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Molloy. Stay with us. Here I am. the hour, we're talking with John in Santa Clara. All right, back to Bandar Bush, who thinks he's really a prince, and actually all he is a creation by the Brits about 80 years ago.
Oh, yes, but to tie in, Mike, to today's headlines, to bring it right up to date, Panorama on BBC has exposed, and I'm sure Greg, you know, being your last guest, is aware of, because he works for BBC,
right,
that so the show Panorama unveiled a scheme to funnel from BAE Systems, Britain's largest arms dealer, by the way, to funnel bribes directly to him with the full knowledge of their...
Of both governments. Yeah, I remember reading about that, and the amount is probably approaching $1 billion.
I believe you add, I believe exponential, I believe it's two.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
And Tony, Phony Tony in G8 meeting
right.
actually did his comment, and this is on the wonderful blog, I want to put in the word for Bill Gallagher, Niagara Falls reporter, took this up. I missed this in the popular press. It said, because it is kind of like the underground, Blair added, we would have lost thousands of jobs, he said, if we blew the whistle on Prince Bandar. So he covered up for it, kind of an Alberto Gonzalez type.
Oh, my God.
This through Britain's serious fraud office, SFO.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we got a gotcha here, Mike, because I did a little research on BAE Systems.
Uh-huh.
And they just purchased United Defense. Do you remember Michael Moore's movie? Who remember the meeting with United Defense? Remember they made the Bradley tank?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he introduced, this is our so-called, our president, George W. Bush. And Bradley of United Defense is, was owned by part and parcel. Now, this is on Wikipedia. My internet is terrible, but the M2 and M3 Bradley tank, now that's owned part and parcel, as you know, by Carlyle Group.
Right.
So now I think anybody that wants to really dig into this has potentially like a BCCI-type web, if you will, of deceit, bribes, and corruption coming, yet again, if you remember BCCI,
right,
coming out of Saudi, you know that Bandar and those guys were, you know, they're tentacles, so... also, for your listeners, by the way, you might want to also read this article on Wikipedia because Carlyle now owns, you may want to boycott them, Hertz Rent-A-Car, Dunkin' Donuts, and last but certainly not least, Baskin and Robbins.
Jesus. Listen, you know what, John, sometimes what I want to do is just go to bed and pull the covers up over my head. And pack a bunch of pillows around me and just lay there and you know, just go to sleep. All this stuff, isn't it amazing? You know, every once in a while you get an email from somebody and you look at it and you go, God, this person's out of their skull. As somebody who tries to tell you, or me, or whoever's paying attention, that there is a group of maybe 200 people on the planet who literally run everything. And then you find out that this nutcase writing you the email is closer to the truth than you or I are willing to acknowledge. It just drives me crazy, John.
Right.
Crazy. Listen, I got to go. Thanks, pal.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. I appreciate you checking in. I appreciate your call. Doesn't that make you mad? You know, you get these emails every once in a while, and it looks like spam because it's sent to you and 8,000 other people, and there's somebody frantically writing about, you know, I've just discovered, you know, this tab fits into that slot, and this group is connected to that group, and look over here, this one, and if you connect this to that, you come up with this, and oh, my God! And you look at that stuff sometimes, I know I do, and I think, Jesus, this person is so, he's got the fever. He's just, or she is just raving on. But on a Saturday afternoon when it's raining out and there's no place to go and nothing to do, and you sit down in front of your computer and you look back at that email and you start doing a little Google this and a little dog pile that and a little this and a little that, and all of a sudden you realize, oh, my God, he's right. It all connects. And then you go to bed, pull the blankets over your head, and just start saying, please go away, please leave me alone. please leave me alone. You ever do that? No? I'm the only one that does that? All right. Well, I don't, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit it. Quick break, we'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I got you on the beat. I left you broken.
Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
It's about 25 before the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls very quickly here. Pete is calling from Portland, Oregon. Pete, welcome to the program. Hey, Pete.
Hey, I wanted to talk about your sort of ongoing issue with just getting discouraged about the way things are going with the Democrats in power. And there's something that really keeps me going, which is basically the idea that, you know, with the group that we've got in right now, like, well, basically there's two pieces of it. One of them is that all the stuff with Alberto Gonzalez, whether or not he resigns or gets kicked out,
mm-hmm.
we basically got Karl Rove playing defense right now going into 08.
Are you sure that someone like Rove knows when it's time to play defense? Karl Rove believes the best defense is a good offense.
Well, I mean, he can believe whatever he wants to, but there's an enormous amount of scrutiny right now on basically tactics that have worked well largely because they've been ignored in the last couple of cycles.
Okay,
so it's going to be a lot harder. I'm not saying he can't do a bunch of nasty stuff.
So you're saying the shadowy corners where Rove operates has got a spotlight on it.
Exactly. There's a lot more people looking with a lot more things in mind than there have been in the past.
Right.
And then the other part of it, the second part of it, is that there's sort of on our side of it, you know, the kinds of Democrats that are getting elected
mm-hmm.
right now, when you look at like John Testers and, you know, and the kind of Republicans that are getting voted out, when you look at like, you know, the bully and Virginia,
right.
getting exposed for what he was,
right?
You know, basically, I'm seeing something with you know, stuff like progressive talk radio and blogs and Wikipedia and just, you know, sort of the opportunity for the masses to keep their own spotlight on the truth and on tracking what the truth is, independent of what's spoon-fed to us.
Right.
That's something that's kind of new, and it's kind of taking, you know, it's going to take some time to percolate into what it is. It's not necessarily all positive, but it's new. And I think there's a lot of potential there for things to work out, but it's not necessarily going to happen the first time. I mean, a year ago, the very possibility of getting a majority in the Senate wasn't even on anybody's radar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's that. I think it's going to take a little while, you know.
Well, Pete, I'm guessing that you're relatively young. You're probably in your 20s?
I'm early 30s.
Early 30s. Okay, well, close enough.
I need some hope to get through.
Right, but people your age usually have that kind of hope. You know, younger people in their teens and 20s really have unbridled hope. I think people in their 30s temper the hope with some real-world experience, which you obviously have done, and I really appreciate the fact that you are in your early 30s and you do have the hope and you are trying to talk positive. I really do appreciate that. And I've said before on this program that if this republic is going to be rescued, it's going to come from people like you, the people 35, 36, 37 and younger, who really, really, really have a stake in how things turn out. Now, I'm kind of caught in your generation because even though I'm twice your age, I have a 3-year-old. Which puts me, just by virtue of Molly, in a lot of ways, kind of back where I was 35 years ago. So it's kind of a weird situation to you know, to want to indulge myself in that kind of pessimistic attitude that people get when they get older, especially when they get older and see what's going on with this Bush crime family, and at the same time have to kind of adopt your attitude, which always is the better attitude. I certainly acknowledge that. So if there is hope, it's going to come from men and women like you, and I hope you guys are strong enough and dedicated enough to work through this crap. And I appreciate what you're saying. That's all I'm trying to say here. I appreciate what you're saying. You make some good points.
Well, I appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, I wish I could more get my head into that. I used to be there with both feet, but it's just I've seen so much garbage and crap. And you know, I want to say, you know, I've got children your age, and I want to say to them, okay, it's your battle now. And I would be more than willing to do that and able to do that, except for one reality. I've got a 3-year-old. So, you know, I've got to stay with people like you and try to slug it out. So I appreciate appreciate what you got to say, Pete. All right? Take care, man. Take care. Take care. Yeah, that's one thing that having a 3-year-old will do to you. You know, I know grandparents who have grandchildren who are 3 years old, but and I'm not saying for a second that they're not as committed to the idea that they want their grandkids to grow up in a world that's, if not stable, isn't run by criminals like Bush. But there's a difference. And this is just a personal note, man. It's difficult for me sometimes because I would love to say, well, you know, I've got grandchildren older than Molly, and I, for some weird reason, I don't worry about my grandchildren because, you know, their parents, their mothers are my daughters, and I think, well, you know, they'll take care of that. And then I think about Molly, and I just think, oh, but wait, wait a second. You also have a 3-year-old. Ah, who is just you know, whatever motivation I still have left. And I'm not trying to get all cynical on you or negative. Come on, people my age, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. The '60s generation that fought tooth and nail. And watched all that fighting kind of get subsumed into this crazy right-wing me-first thing that developed. I don't know where it came from. Maybe it came from the same generation that fought so hard to overcome. I don't know anymore. Like I said earlier in the program tonight, I don't have any answers. All I have are questions. No answers. People in their 30s have the answers. You know, I'm stuck with the questions. Not all people. You know what I'm saying. There are a lot of people my age who are very wise, have lots of wisdom. I just don't happen to be one. I don't, you know. I think one of the signs of maturity is understanding your own limitations, right? Now, don't send me emails and say, oh, Mike, no, really, you do it. No. Just, you know, let me vent the way the way you guys vent sometime. All right, fair enough. Okay, that's fair enough. But that was a good call. I understand what he's saying. Thanks, Pete. Back to your phone calls here. Who's next in the barrel? Tim. Tim is calling from San Diego. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Miguel. Another great show. Really enjoyed the second.
No, thank you.
Tell me something. When you register to vote, aren't you registering? And when you sign, isn't that under penalty of perjury?
I think it is, yeah.
Okay, we've got a rascal out here tied up with Abramoff. By the name of Brian Bilbray.
Yeah, I've heard the name.
Yeah, and, you know, he was a congressman for a while, and he lost his job.
Right.
So he became a lobbyist, turned right around, revolving door.
Yeah.
And, yes, family man, bunch of kids, and actually joined his kids in a lawsuit against the state of either Virginia or West Virginia, I forget which.
Mm-hmm.
Suing so that his kids would have in-state tuition. In other words, stating under penalty of perjury, he's a resident of the state of, take your pick, Virginia or West Virginia.
Right, right.
I'm not certain which, but it's one or the other.
Uh-huh.
Okay? At the same time, he's filing to run for Cunning Scams X seat here in San Diego. and says, oh, I'm living in Carlsbad, taking care of my mother. Well, I guess that means if he gets elected, he won't take care of his mother, but you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
the boy is perjuring himself. I'd like an update on him. Got to keep track of these felons. You know, three strikes and you're out. These guys are losers.
It's astonishing, Tim. You know, when I think what Republicans, the so-called family values crowd, the so-called Christian crowd, what they do, what they attempt, and what they get away with, it's just it's astonishing. Astonishing how willing we are to let these bastards get away with it.
But we have to remember to learn to read between the lines. It's corporate family values.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, it's the conditional family values. It's not about you and me. It's about corporate family values. Like, I think it was Greg Palast was talking about no one else, no one in this country was covering the caging that was revealed. It was covered by BBC all around the world.
That's right.
I'm looking at a printout about, this will strike near and dear to your heart. You've got a couple years on me. Kent State victim to release recording. I printed this out off the old computer from May 1st.
Yeah, where there's a recording that clearly indicates that it wasn't the students that provoked the firing. It was whoever was in charge of the military that day that ordered the shooting with no provocation.
Exactly. Yeah. A voice on the tape is heard yelling, right here, get set, point, fire. Boom.
Well, it was only 37 years ago, so, like George Bush says, that's history. Who cares? You know, that's a
right
long time. Long time ago.
Yep. Enjoy your show, Miguel.
All right. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Got a break? All right. Let's do a break. We'll come back and try to squeeze in another call or two. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Wish I was a helper on a long mountain. Wish I was. Thanks to the crew, the usual clutch of reprobates who brought you this program tonight, starting with Ian Huff, who engineered in the Phoenix at KPHX and answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Billy Foster, the moderator at the NovaMradio.com chat room, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, Catherine Bay, who is the executive producer of this program. And don't forget, go to NovaMradio.com for all sorts of things, but primarily to sign up for downloads and podcasts by becoming a founding member. You will do that, right? Thank you. All right. Back to your calls. Tim is calling from Mineola, Texas. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how are you?
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
Well, I just only had a couple of points to make.
All right.
Can you name anything good that George Bush has done for our country?
Not a thing. I've asked that question many times, invite anyone to call in with an answer, but I can't think of a thing. No, sir.
And the other thing is, don't you think Harvard is really proud of that MBA that they gave him? He is probably the worst advertisement for an MBA for any graduate school in the world.
Isn't that the truth? Oh, God.
It's like, who bought it for him? Who paid for his classes?
Yeah.
Who got him through the classes?
I wonder what kind of a demonstration there would be by the faculty of Harvard if, for some weird reason, he were invited to speak at a commencement.
He couldn't complete a sentence.
That's very true.
He makes his dad sound eloquent.
He does indeed. He does indeed.
It's like it's an embarrassment every time he opens his mouth. It's just my opinion.
It's your opinion and about 100 million more of us that are stuck with this guy too, Tim, so trust me.
Well, I come from a county in East Texas that used to be like 85% Democrat.
Uh-huh.
And now it's probably 85% Republican.
What happened?
To be Republican, it's like this history professor at Tyler Junior College, Professor Kirkpatrick, said, it's the right thing to be is a conservative Republican. It's just the right thing to be.
But it's not.
But it's not. And it comes across as we need to be the correct political category or whatever.
But, you know, when I think about Molly Ivins and Jim Hightower, just two quick examples of what Texas politics can produce, people like that, and then I wonder how in the world anyone in Texas can be a Republican. It's beyond me. It's totally beyond me.
It's mind-boggling. And Molly Ivins was my hero. I loved her. And
she
Jim
was.
Hightower is so interesting and hilarious to listen to.
He is.
He pokes fun at everybody.
He does. He does indeed.
You know, it's no party. It's just if you did something wrong, he told you about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always appreciated Jim Hightower, his writings. One of my favorite quotations from him, he was talking about people that say, well, Jim, you know, I'm kind of a middle of the roader. I'm not left and I'm not right. And his famous statement, the only thing you find in the middle of the road is a yellow line and dead armadillos.
That's correct.
And I love that. I love that. Tim, got to move on. Thank you, sir. Hope you call in again. Take care. I appreciate you checking in. Steve, Folsom, California. Hey, Steve.
Hey.
How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing fine, sir.
Hey, I was just responding to, you had a caller earlier. He was talking about training, the Special Forces training.
Yeah.
There was a book written by a Brit who was a paratrooper back in the 80s about how the Special Forces trained the Mujahideen and Fedayeen in Afghanistan.
Right.
In building car bombs and training them in terror, essentially to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan.
Uh-huh.
And if you look, you've probably seen the article in the New York Times. It was in the New York Times just yesterday, June 11th, about arming, I maybe even talked about arming the Sunnis.
The
in
Sunnis,
Iraq.
Yeah, we talked about that last night. Yeah,
to battle Al-Qaeda. So, you know, anything is possible with these guys. But one of the things I also wanted to mention was about these neocon think tanks. I know you don't talk too much about the neoconservatives, but there was a big meeting with some of the senior neocons. It's called the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Have you heard of that?
I believe I have, yes.
And they had a big meeting in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And their big deal is there are a lot of Soviet dissidents involved. Nathan Sharansky is one of them.
Right.
And their idea is a Reagan, you know, these people who are brainwashed into believing that Reagan defeated the Soviet Union single-handedly when actually there was a huge peace movement within the Soviet Union that...
Well, yeah, the mothers of all those people who died in Afghanistan, they were one of the reasons that the Soviet Union, Gorbachev, was under tremendous pressure.
Right.
I'm sorry, not Gorbachev. Who was Yeltsin?
Yeltsin, right.
Was under tremendous pressure because of what happened in Afghanistan. And
well, absolutely. But what they've tried, this neoconservative group has done, especially with these dissidents, is to translate the idea, the quote Reaganite idea, and translate that to the Middle East, where in the Middle East you can have this Reaganite revolution of democracy go the
impossible.
Way the old USSR went when they are. It's totally apples and oranges.
Yes, it is. It's impossible. And, Steve, I have to leave it there.
Okay.
Thanks, man. Thanks for checking
Bye-bye.
In. We'll talk again.
Thanks.
We'll talk again. Yeah, we're going to close the program with this tonight. Don't freak. It's just stuck in my head. I can't get out of my head. That's all. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. I'm Radio Network.